collaborations with postdocs here, and that's a very modest particle physics group contribution to the subject of beautiful subject of quantum gravity, and it's something to do with Harjava gravity. And let me just set the stage that if I'm practitioner particle physicist who usually calculates things in eta minu with very tiny corrections to eta minu, I'd go and expand right away with all these sort of beautiful things that may be swept under the carpet and so on. But if I do that and I try to calculate something in normal GR because of the sort of 1/mass type of coupling, I will get corrections, say, to electron propagator behaving as 1/m Planck squared, which is the same as a G Newton times some ultraviolet scale squared. And that's where, everything will depend on how the theory behaves in the UV and how the gravity is UV completed. So we know, for example, a very nice example of a similar behavior in the chiral perturbation theory, where this type of loops with pions exchanged by nucleons, they lead to strong interactions. But we know that the theory flows into something completely different, QCD, that respects the symmetries of the chiral perturbation theory. But it's sort of, at that point, theory completely reorganizes itself, and you have the new degrees of freedom. It has nothing to do with, or very little to do with, original pions and neutrons, right? So the question, I thought about how to characterize Harjava-Lifshitz gravity, and I think that the best description would be sort of a no drama approach to how this loops are regulated, right? So, like in this example of the chiral perturbation theory, the structure of the theory, when it reaches the strong interaction scale, completely reorganizes itself, and you have absolutely new degrees of freedom. You have other examples with string group here, or non-group, that you have the basically field theory plus GR, but once you hit the string scale, you have a completely different animals propagating, right? So it's 100% rearrangement. People who play with large extra dimension, in some sense also any extra dimension, have a very large rearrangement of stuff when you reach the decompactification scale. So these are sort of some adventurous people have played with quantum gravity based on R mu nu squared, which. Well, it could be, it's a comedy because drama should have occurred already, right? Because the theory has ghosts and we should all sort of disappear, right? In a way, right? Yes, yes. But there is, of course, all these approaches, and I am not educated enough in the work of my quantum gravity colleagues, but I'm presuming the thinking is that once you reach the Planck scale, something instead of the mundane space-time opens up, and fluctuating geometry of some sort should occur, right? And so the Harjava approach is interesting because it sort of modifies this propagator and tries to actually set these loops and everything finite and absolutely mundane. And what I argue and what I contributed to the subject is that it has to occur at the scales much, much lower than the Planck scale, just for the consistency of the theory. So this is the example what's done in this theory. So the idea is that you modify, you have to give something away, right? So what's given away is Lorentz invariance, and you just say that at some that momentum and energy scale differently above a certain energy momentum scale, and at very short distances, the gravitons, for example, have a very funny behavior, 1/momentum k few, omega going to proportional to momentum cube, and that's that leads to this type of propagators. And when you so the behavior over omega is the same, but the behavior of a space part of the momentum is completely different. So if you are choosing to calculate any of these loop diagrams by integrating first of over omega, you will get the residue that is suppressed by a higher order of the space momentum, and the things are convergent, right? That's the main appeal. And the difference with what you could say Liouville story, right, is that unlike the Liouville story where you can use this covariant for momentum for regularizing or making the loops convergent, is that here you can sort of, if you take it seriously, you break it apart, and there is again a ghost in the theory, right? So the Herjavec approach is to try to make no ghost and at the same time improve the UV behavior of the loops so that nothing dramatic happens at this scale. So this is all a very nice suggestion, but there are big open questions. And you know, the first thing you should ask yourself is that, okay, Lorentz invariance, we just gave it up, right? Don't we know it one better than 1 part in 10 to the 20? So is this just you know a completely you know a model with uncurable birth defects, and we should throw it away, or we should actually maybe try to see how it can be consistent with a low energy Lorentz invariance, right? So that's the answer here is cautious that it can be made consistent with Lorentz invariance in the meta sector that we test very well. Now there are some other open issues that are not completely fixed there. It's like why is this, for example, the propagation speed of gravity and matter would be the same, and what's various things that the ghost-like omega to the four terms can be introduced by quantum loops and so on, and lots of questions regarding low energy behavior. After all, there is a new so there is lots of questions. There is lots of questions regarding low energy behavior. So sorry, I didn't catch your question. And then there are questions about more sophisticated stuff like black holes and so on. And the list is long. So what we did, basically our idea is to take that scale. Much smaller than the Planck scale, and that at least could solve the first question as to why there could be a dramatic breaking of Lorentz invariance in the gravity sector while matter will remain roughly Lorentz invariant. And so the nice part of the Herjavec gravity, the nicest part, is that you don't have to cut these loops, but they do it themselves, right, for you, right? Because you treat all this high dimensional, in from the point of view of normal 4D logic, high dimensional in momentum space terms, you treat it not as perturbation, but you try to take them seriously, and that leads to calculation that you can perform, so that you can calculate these loops due to the gravity exchange and calculate, for example, something observable that would be a difference between the propagation of the speed of photon and the electron, something that people have set very strong bounds at. And the interesting part of the story is that you have, for most parts, you get a nicely behaving answer that, of course, there will be 1 over M Planck squared in front, or G Newton in front. That's the set what sets the scale of a vertex here for in each graviton where the graviton touches matter. But then the behavior of these loops is well improved at Herjavec-Lifshitz scale, and so you have the nicest situation from the point of view of a particle physicist, where you have the two scales, right? The ratio of the two scales, and then the idea is now that you should be taking this Harjava-Lifshitz scale much, much smaller than the Planck scale, and that at least gives you some hope for maintaining Lorentz invariance in the matter sector. So and given the fact that the constraints are on the order of 10 to the minus 20 or so, the scale of Harjava-Lifshitz should be at the level of 10 to the 9 GeV. That would refer not basically to just to Harjava-Lifshitz, but any theory that would play with quantum gravity emerging from separate time and three-dimensional spaces unrelated and modifying somehow the graviton propagators. So the picture that I have is that the matter lives on the finely grained and mostly Lorentz symmetric lattice, and the gravity lives at the distance scales that are much larger. Sort of it's as if you would discretize a three-dimensional space and leave the time flow. Okay, so that's the picture. So, but the interesting part is that this requirement on small corrections to the speed of light also set the maximal size of the interaction for the gravity, right? So in this loops, roughly, you can say that the size of the gravitational interaction scales as this, right? So here we're now saying that this factor is 10 to minus 20. So in that picture, gravity freezes over at 10 to minus 20. It never becomes strong, right? I have not looked at the cosmological picture, what happens in the early universe or in the black holes, but the idea that this freezes over really and never becomes a strong interaction, right? Because if you take the regular picture of regular gravitons and you scatter something at with energies close to Planckians at large angles, that your amplitudes due to the gravity would be as big or bigger than the rest, right? So this is an example of gravity staying weak all the time. So I just want to say maybe another slide that we have also found some, it's not visible at all, that we found some interesting connection to previous work that was done by me on Lorentz invariance plus supersymmetry. So if you just forget about the gravity sector and you take matter as supersymmetric, then Lorentz symmetry appears as an accidental symmetry of nature. And so the idea is now to take a Harjava gravity and marry it with the supersymmetric matter sector. In this case, you have not a supergravity, but a completely different construction. You don't have any gravitinos, you have a MSSM sector, and the nice part of it is that the gravity breaks supersymmetry explicitly, but in a controlled way because of the UV convergent behavior. So you actually generate an explicit breaking of SUSY, but it's small and well controlled, again, by the same ratio. That's right. So this scale is really Harjava-Lifshitz scale is really free as long as it's low enough, right? So that can be used as a breaking of supersymmetry. So I just finished because I'm true to my time, unlike our dear leader. So I'll just finish by throwing some random comments, right? So I would like to just point again to the fact that we shouldn't be all thinking that, oh, let's, you know, do quantum gravity at L Planck length, right? Because that's then it's quantum foam, and okay, we solve it, great. You have less fun compared to the case if you would do it at a much, much smaller energy scale. And then you will have a scale separation. And then you would have a possibility to treat your quantum gravity in the intermediate regime, right? From M Planck to that scale, right? That's, yes.
What is the bound on this Lorentz vibration scale experiment?
It would have to be below 10^9 GeV.
That's the bound.
Right. Well, more or less, yes. About 10^9, right? I mean, it's
below.
Below. That's that. So that's the idea is that we make you know, everything at a very high scale and we'll be fine. With gravity, it works the way around, right? It interacts due to the 1/Planck interactions, and you actually want to make it as at a low scale as possible. So that's probably another interesting good message. And there is something that relates to the, let me finish. You ask a question to what Lee I think is thinking. So the time here is played absolutely separate and central role in this construction is not treated on the same level as space dimension, and that relates to this Gauss behavior or non-Gauss behavior, right? So omega squared terms and but no omega to the fourth, and so on. And now there's a sort of provocative thing that I wanted to say is that if the no drama kind of UV completion of gravity is found at a really low scale, like 10^9, as I suggest, and okay, so gravity then will freeze at the level of the coupling of 10^-20. Do we need quantum gravity after that? I mean, like, do we need to worry about the quantum geometry and what not, right? So this it's not obvious to me the answer, but maybe not, right? And so that's I also want to say that this is probably an example of such modification, but it's not the theory, right? So in principle, one should be trying also to construct other examples where gravity becomes really somehow mundane above a certain scale. So that's all what a piece of work I wanted to, or thought that I wanted to share.
Okay. This formula. The idea that the Planck's the scale which space-time symmetry is based has to be low.
That's low. Yes.
Yeah. So that's exactly what we want. Something to get.
This model has a right to exist only in that corner, right? I mean that you're forced to go low. Otherwise it just makes no sense from other point of view.
John, you asked good questions, but I'm gonna do something we sometimes do, which is there are lots of younger people and science students over here. Does somebody want to start a discussion? Yes? You're not a student. Your hand is, you look young.
Actually, I just suspect that Horowitz gravity can be used as a UV condition for Einstein gravity. So I have two reasons for this.
You suspect that it can or
cannot? Cannot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so first, this R squared term is a high order derivative, so you put it a very large, very bigger coefficient to make this theory kind of well behaved as UV. Then there's a question that this strong coupling mode at UV will actually change this IR behavior. And actually, we also have a second point is that this lattice model construction. We can easily construct some lattice model with this R squared term at UV. And this gravity will have some cubic dispersion.
This is R squared, the three dimensional R, right? I mean, it's not a full R, four dimensional R.
Yeah, in this lattice model, we use this three dimensional R.
Okay.
But then we find some experience that the idea actually very simple, kind of. If you have this R squared term at the lattice, the three dimensional one, and then you have cubic dispersion, but at UV, it affects this UV behavior and also changes this IR behavior.
That's possible. So one of the things that I wanted to say at the end is provocative, but I did say that, or maybe such theories are inconsistent. See the next talk. So it is of course what I said could be understood as necessary conditions you should have on your theory so that it doesn't run into direct contradiction with the experiment at step zero. They can be whatever construction that I've been working with, it could be sick for other reasons, right? And then possibly some of the reasons you mentioned that there will be strong interaction propagating into IR, right? So I have not really invested a deep thought into that, so I would not comment further.
Well, I think I wanted to ask, you mentioned the scalar mode, and I wanted to ask which becomes fully proper.
So well, that's probably a perfect place for the next talk.
Okay. So you don't know the bound on this?
There are various bounds, but if you just look at various tests of Lorentz invariance in the gravity sector itself, they're not necessarily all that hugely strong, right? And then at the level of 1 part and 10 to the 5 and so on. So this, the couplings of the scalar are chosen such that it's sort of close to the GR point, then that's okay.
So from in your case, it doesn't enter.
It does enter in the loops as well. Yes, it enters in the loops and it doesn't create any. The problem that is created in the loops, and I sort of bypass that point, is by the. In the loops, you have to add the vector part of the metric, and the vector part of the metric in Harjava gravity is not modified. It's like in GR, and you get back your lambda squared divergence. So you have to actually, go away a little bit from his construction and modify the Lagrangian further that you have. You also Lifshitzize the vector part of the propagator. Otherwise, this doesn't work.
Okay, other comments? John, then Raphael,
Quill. By violating Lorentz invariance of gravity, you violated the local gauge invariance of gravity.
So that's why you have an additional propagating scalar.
Crowd counting, when proving renormalizability, crowd counting is not enough.
I agree. So there's.
So I've yet to see the proof.
Absolutely. I agree. There's 100 papers written, thousands of papers written on this. They're mostly dealing with. Or how this theory is different in the infrared from the general relativity, and there is lots of to discover. But yet, anyone should calculate, at least one loop effective action, or start from that. That has not been done. Absolutely, yeah. So it's in that sense, it just remains a hope, a proposal, right? I was just trying to emphasize some interesting features of this proposal if it goes through.
It's a question related to the point you raised, but it's typical when you destroy the light cone structure of the theory, like you've done here, that there's a puzzle why all the different fields have the same, at low energy, have the same light cone.
That
usually requires some sort of fine tuning. I couldn't went by so fast. I couldn't see.
Yeah, there is an idea of 10 years ago that if you sort of actually supersymmetrize matter and keep the supersymmetric supersymmetry algebra the same, then normal Lorentz invariance, then. The Lorentz invariance in the supersymmetric model appears as an accidental symmetry, which means that whatever terms that violate or modify the dispersion cones, right, are suppressed by higher dimensional powers of a higher scale. So, and that may be just enough to maintain meta Lorentz invariance, not precisely in the meta sector, but at a level consistent with observations.
So you said you might need to supplement this with supersymmetry.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely, yes. Supersymmetry plus this strange gravity that goes nonlinear above a certain, but low, relatively low scale.
Okay, before we have time, actually, the last question. Let me just record that I'm surprised that some of the shape dynamics people haven't raised their hand and said, well, we can break Lorentz invariants in a similar way that John Lipschitz has drawn on couple scales, since they haven't done that kind of thing.
All right.
Sorry, Lee, I didn't hear you. You can break.
Shape dynamics has a similar, one of the motivations for shape dynamics was to mimic the John Lipschitz. Mm-hmm. That have a gauge invariance which kill the coupling divisional scalar field.
Thank you.
And so this is a lesson for shape dynamics.
Good. I can mention that if you want.
Okay.